And thanks to the organizers for setting all this up. So let's see what's the outline of my talk. I'm going to start by giving a brief introduction to what the continuous MERA is, which is the object that we will be dealing with during the talk. And the second part will actually be the results. That is, we're going to speak about what is this UV regularization phenomenon that we see in continuous MERA. And these results are joint work with my PhD advisor here at Perimeter, who's Gifre Vidal. OK, so continuous MERA is a continuous tensor network. So to know what that is, we have to start by seeing what is the discrete version of a tensor network. So tensor networks are ansatz states, or a variational class of ansatz states that provide approximations to quantum many-body states. And these are a variational class in the sense that given a certain problem, a certain quantum theory that I want to approximate, I can set up an optimization problem that will tell me what is the best element in that class that I can use to approximate the quantum many-body states state. And they have satisfied a certain set of properties. The first one for which they started being used is that they provide an efficient representation in the sense that I can use less parameters to define a wave function. A typical example here is, can I find a way to specify a wave function in some manner that I only need a linear number, a number of parameters that grows linearly with the system size rather than exponentially, which is typical dimensionality curves that one finds when working with many-body states. But they also turn out to be very useful because they provide some insights when giving this representation of quantum many-body states. They have some nice diagrammatic notation, which is what gives them the name of tensor networks, because you start doing tensors with different bonds. They provide clues about what's the entanglement structure of the states or the lack of entanglement in them. And some of them even have some encoded notion of RG flow built in them, which is precisely the case of the MERA, which is the one that we're going to be looking at. And the MERA, multiscale entanglement renormalization and SATs, is slightly older than a decade and was proposed as an ansatz for ground states of critical Hamiltonians. And it basically consists on this quantum circuit that starts with a product state, a tensor of all zeros, say, if I'm talking about qubits, and then introduces entanglement between different degrees of freedom by this set of unitary gates that are disposed in such a manner that I advance in scale. I first introduce entanglement between long distance separated degrees of freedom, and then I advance until I introduce entanglement at the shortest possible distance in this lattice, which is nearest neighbors. The variational parameters in this state are precisely the unitaries that I'm using, the gates. And this particular ansatz has proven to be useful for representing the underlying CFT to the critical Hamiltonian, has allowed to recover some CFT data from it. So it has passed certain tests of utility. OK, so what does it mean to have this in the continuum? A continuous tensor network means that we are going to stop considering a lattice system and go to a continuous system. We're going to still have an ansatz that depends on a certain number of parameters, the same way as before we had the gates, the unitary gates. And this is still going to give us an approximation to a target state. In this case, it's going to be the ground state of a CFT for us, because they are easy states to begin with. And it also means that our chances of making these nice little diagrams with big dots connected with lines are going to decrease dramatically. But we do our best, or better said, we learn from others doing their best. This is a proposal by Jutta Hegemann and other people from Ghent, in which they generalize this construction that I presented a minute ago to the case of quantum field theories. Then we started, if you remember, with a product state that we replaced by an uncorrelated product state in quantum field theory, a state whose connected correlators vanish. And we replace this quantum circuit with a unitary evolution in scale that is generated by a certain Hermitian operator that I'm going to represent here as L plus K. If I had more time, I would describe what each of these species are in detail. But so roughly said, they correspond to like the square and the triangle tensors here, the square and the triangle gates. And this evolution for a certain time or a certain, and this axis is actually scale, so for a certain interval of scales, provides us with our approximation to the ground state, which is the C-MERA. This is what it's written down here. There's this unitary that depends on time and evolves the product state into a C-MERA. And the particular reason why we're interested in this thing, particular reason why we're going to say that this has some UV regularization scheme, is the presence of this lambda here. In particular, the 1 over lambda is a length scale that is built within this operator here, this generator of the evolution. And it's a length scale that tells you that K, which is in some way generating the entanglement between different degrees of freedom, does not entangle below that length scale. It's, so to say, the parallel of the fact that here we had a lattice spacing, meaning I cannot have entanglement at distances shorter than the lattice spacing, which is obvious because there's no degrees of freedom to entangle. Here there are degrees of freedom at any possible length scale that I can find, but I'm just going to say I'm going to use a unitary evolution that does not introduce entanglement at these length scales. Okay, so what is our claim? And now we go to the second part, where do we talk about UV regularization? The claim is that because of the way we are evolving, Zimera states, like the one we defined, interpolate between the target state that we were going towards at long distances. Those are the distances at which we introduced entanglement. And the uncorrelated product state, the one that we started with, at short distances. Short meaning smaller than this length scale that I said below which we were not entangling. Hence, this lambda here, which is the momentum scale associated to the 1 over lambda that was the length scale of the entangler, acts like an intrinsic UV cutoff of the theory. Of course, this is not a very catchy slogan, so we decided to say something like C-meras are chimeras, in the sense of being built of two different parts, being a hybrid theory, not of being an illusion. Because as we are going to say, we can actually build these things. So the rest of the talk, I'm going to give an example of how these things work. So I'm going to take a very simple theory, a 1 plus 1 dimensional free fermion theory, which has this Hamiltonian. This is just the Dirac Hamiltonian. I just wrote it in terms of the two components of the spinner, psi1 and psi2. This is also inspired in a construction of a paper that introduced the continuous mera. And I'm just going to flash what's the structure of the entangler, just to let you know that indeed the entangler contains the length scale or the momentum scale lambda in its definition. This is a profile, a smearing profile of how this operator acts on the degrees of freedom. Okay, so let's look for evidence of UV regularization. Sorry.
Is that entangler similar to the entangler in the regular mirror?
So the entanglers in the regular mirror are unitary gates, are two-body unitary gates, say. These, you can think of, indeed, here we have a bilocal operator, so it's taking 2 degrees of freedom and performing some unitary, so in that sense, it's similar, but it's adapted to the context of having a continuous system. But there's, as far as I know, no evident way to translate one into the other. Okay, so let's look for evidence of why do we say that this state is UV regularized. We're going to start with something very simple, and that is that all these states are actually Gaussian states, meaning that we can characterize them by a set of annihilation operators, the ones that annihilate the ground state of a quantum field theory, when the Hamiltonian is quadratic at least. And it turns out that for our three states, the product state that we were starting with, the C-mera that we use, and also the target states that we're approximating, they all can be the linear constraints, the annihilation operators can all be written in the same way, in a very similar way, which is this linear combination of the operators, the fields in the theory, with some function here, some angular function depending on the momentum, that we call theta of k, and that totally parameterizes the state within this class of Gaussian states. So the first thing that we can do is like let's plot this theta for the three states and let's take a look at what we get. So in the case of the target state, the CFT, this theta is constant equal to pi over 4. In the case of the product state, it's constant equal to 0. And in the continuous mirror, we see that the theta function interpolates between the behavior of the CFT at small momenta, which is long length scales, and it goes to asymptotically closer to the product state, to zero, theta equals zero, in the large k limit, meaning the UV limit or the short distance limit. And this is already a hint that indeed this is what is going to happen, what is happening, that we've built from the product state here, we've built an approximation to the CFT at short distance, at long distances, but we never really got to entangle the short distances. If this is a little bit too abstract, we can go to something more tangible, which is the two-point functions, or the correlation functions of the theory. and we can compute them for, again, our three states. The target state, we said it was the ground state of a CFT, so it has some power law decay of correlations. This is a particular correlation function, two-point function of the theory. So in a log-log plot, we are going to see a straight line. The case of the product state, we said that it was uncorrelated, so the correlations here are delta functions. So the only thing is that the delta function is at infinity in this axis, so we cannot see it. And the rest is zero. I also couldn't plot the zero, so just place it here, it's constant. And we observed that when we compute the two-point function for the continuous mirror, indeed, when we go at length scales that are longer than my UV cutoff, my 1 over lambda, the behavior, the decay of the correlators is indeed a power law with the right dimension. We know that this exponent here is related to the scaling dimension of the operator. But once we cross this length scale and we go into shorter and shorter length scales to the UV limit, we see that this correlator indeed saturates to a constant and behaves more or less like the product state correlator, save for the fact that it's non-zero. And they both have a delta, an on-site delta that is not represented in this plot. So first we see that we've removed the UV divergence that the CFT correlator had, because this goes to a constant, except for the on-site delta, of course. And we see that we have two regimes in the theory, the long distance regime, which looks like the CFT again, and the short distance regime, which looks like the product state. Again, we can repeat these computations for another measure of correlation in the QFT ground state, which is the entanglement entropy. In particular, we are in our 1+1 dimensional theory, so we're just choosing an interval of certain length, tracing out the rest, and computing the entanglement entropy. And indeed, we find again these two regimes between the length of the interval being smaller than our cutoff 1 over lambda and longer than that. In the long distance regime, we find again the same scaling that we have in the CFT, which is a logarithmic scaling. And in the short distance regime, we find that this goes to zero in a way that we can actually give an estimation, a theoretical analytical estimation of how this goes to zero, something like L log L, something like that, L being the distance of the interval, the length of the interval. And something very important is that we have removed the divergence. We observe that these we compute by discretizing the theory. And then when you do that on a CFT and you send your lattice parameter to zero to try to recover a continuous limit, you find that this diverges because you're including more and more degrees of freedom that are still entangled. While in this case, we have degrees of freedom that are, once we go past a certain scale, those degrees of freedom have not been entangled. So we have a convergence in the entanglement entropy. So in some sense, we have succeeded at regulating the quantum field theory. So just to conclude, we have seen that continuous mirror states are tensor network inspired, are a tensor network inspired by a variational class for states of quantum field theories. We have provided evidence that these particular states come with a UV, an intrinsic UV cutoff that does not break symmetries, as in the case of placing your theory in a lattice, but it still cuts you, like it still removes the UV divergences. And we've provided some evidence in based on correlation measures of how that happens. And this has some potential for the future in applications as a systematic regularization scheme for quantum field theories. Of course, applications to interesting theories. We've been looking at a very simple case, which was this free fermion. We have examples for free bosons as well in 1+1, in 2+1, but those are still Gaussian free theories, and we want to see if we can also apply to interacting cases. Renormalization, the same way the connection that Mera has with renormalization, we could also try to look at it in the continuum, and there's a lot of interest in holography as well because of the fact that we have an extra dimension that is a scale, and it can, in some sense, like there are some ideas of connecting the holographic interpretations of Mera to the holographic interpretations of the continuous Mera. And with that, I would like to conclude. Thank you for your attention, and I will take any questions that you want.
We have plenty of time for questions. If you assume your function is analytic, then you could expand it into bases depending on the Chebyshev or something.
And sorry, which function are you referring to?
When you switch from the discrete to the continuous entanglement operator, you have integrals over functions in there. So
You mean when we compute the entanglement entropy?
Yes.
Yes.
And if you do that, then you have an explicit sum in there, and that seems to be somehow corresponding to have a network. And if you do that, you could get rid of the integral and transform it into a sum. Would that be a way to connect the continuum theory to the discrete answers to the lattice answer?
So I don't have a very sharp answer for that question. Indeed, like expanding things in finite basis is one of the most obvious ideas that one can have when you want to treat these things.
Mode decomposition of something, and then you have
exactly
a and that corresponds somehow to an infinite network.
Yeah, the step that I don't see, like that for sure, I just don't see how easily, at least, how the step of connecting that to a discrete network could be, because the at least the image of the discrete network that I would have to go through my whole talk to get back to is it's very physical in the sense that it's telling you like your gates are local in this. You basically have your state there, and you have your gates acting on the state, and then like the scale is represented there. Once you go to like an arbitrary basis, if you
use a hierarchical basis that has the same features.
Yeah, in that sense,
sure. And smaller.
In that sense, no.
Yeah, making the link between a lattice system and the NQFT in the first place is not that easy. I think to just map everything from a, I don't think it's that easy to just like throw down a function that can map any operator from the QFT into a nice and local operator in your lattice system and things like that. I think if you can find such a map, then you can probably find such functions which would map these unitaries, these quasi-local unitaries, to things that are rather local in the lattice system. And then if you just find the right functions, you could do something like that.
So if I consider two point correlation function of these fermions in the mm-hmm. in the state, the CMLL state, does it blow up when you take the points together?
So it does have an on-site delta correlation function. So it would be something. So this is basically a flat, a plateau in this correlation here. And then once you get zero, you do get a delta correlation function. But there's nothing more than that. It's just the delta, and then like the next thing is already flat.
At zero distance, it's finite.
At zero distance, in the limit of zero distance is finite. The zero distance itself is not. So you get something of the, this has some delta of the positions with some coefficient here, and then you get some function. And this function does not, that's the one plotted there. This one does not blow up. But indeed, you still get, this is the same as, these kind of correlations are the same that you have in the uncorrelated product state.
So in your conclusion slide, you said something like, in contrast to a lattice model, yours does not break symmetry.
Exactly. Does not break some of the symmetries.
Yeah, so I'm wondering which kind of symmetry you mean, because it seems you introduce a lattice scale in your model.
Okay, so first, the obvious ones, which are broken by the lattice to discrete subgroups, are translations and rotations, that here are not broken because you're still in the continuum and your state is still translationally invariant. The fact of conformal symmetry, when you're introducing a length scale, actually there's some work by this group at Perimeter that has shown that you can indeed, in these kind of states, still reproduce the full conformal algebra, the full conformal group. It's just you have to redefine some of the group actions, some of the generators in some sense. So it can be seen indeed that your scaling transformation that would not leave, the traditional scaling transformation would not leave this state invariant because it does have a length scale that would be scaled, can be modified to accompany, like to introduce some, it would actually turns out that it is the, sorry, I'm going forward, I wanted to go backward. It turns out, sorry, that you can replace that dilation operator by another dilation operator, which in the end turns out to be this L plus K, the generator of scale transformations that I was showing before. And this one does leave the state invariant. And then you can...
Lorentz symmetry
can also, like the all the boost generators and such can also be replaced by another version that is that leaves this state invariant.
So, seems you have a land scale there, so I wonder how that land scale is compatible with the Lorentz symmetry.
So what happens, I'm not that familiar with the case of Lorentz symmetry, what happens with the scaling transformation is that once your scaling transformation is going to, indeed, when you rescale space, your length scale transforms accordingly, but then the extra part that you add to your generator is one that disentangles the state until it gives it moves your cutoff back in some kind of a renormalization philosophy to where it was before. So it leaves it invariant by modifying the transformation that you're doing.
I think we're done with time, so maybe you can discuss it in the call.
Sure.
Sorry for cutting you off.
Yeah, thank you.